You're listening to the Vice Chancellor's Hour, a ministry of Radio ABC 993 FM on the campus of African Bible University. I'm Jeremiah Pitts, a professor and administrator here at the African Bible University in Uganda. The purpose of Vice Chancellor's Hour is to provide biblical and theological teachings that are an extension of the ministry of the university.
And welcome back to another episode of the Vice Chancellor's Hour. I really love doing this new series on leadership. We are doing case studies on individual leaders. As I've said several times in the past, the Bible isn't a textbook. I mean, some people want to treat it like it is, but it isn't a textbook. And in fact, there are certain topics where things are simply not laid out for us in an ABC manner. God, in His wisdom and in His providential control of all things, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, directed men to write in a variety of genres, some of them history books, some of them poetry, wisdom literature, prophecy, gospels, letters, so forth and so on. And in that, none of them are textbooks. And so for certain topics, you'll find that the Bible actually teaches on them quite a bit. But it can be very helpful to look at specific cases and figure out what they teach us from God's Word. We can gain a lot of wisdom that way. And leadership is one of those. We have far more examples of good and bad leadership than we do direct teachings on leadership specifically. So there's a lot of information about leadership, but a lot of times the best way to come about it might be through what we call a case study. And we've been going through this series. This is the fourth episode in the series, looking at both good and bad examples of leadership. And it's not to say that each of the people that we've looked at has always been a good leader or has always been a bad leader. Most of the examples in the scripture are a mix of both good and bad leaders. And today's subject is no exception. In fact, he may be one of the best examples of someone in the Bible who had some really good days, but also had some really bad days. And if we look at his life, it can be hard sometimes to figure out whether you want to put him with the good guys or the bad guys. Now, I have answered that question in great detail, but it's been a little while since we had those episodes. The guy we're looking at today is a guy named Joab. Joab is one of my favorite people from the Bible. He is all over the early historical books, and he's an incredibly important person, but I put him in my B-list Bible character series because he's so overshadowed by David. His life and David's life are really intertwined together, and David, of course, is the far better known of the two. And our passage today we're looking at, because I can't really look at his whole life, I've already done that, I really just want to zoom in on one particular incident in Joab's life and take a look at it, and you can look at it with me. Hopefully you have a chance to hear all the episodes. If you're listening to me on the radio here at Radio ABC 993 FM, I hope you catch the whole episode. You really want to get the whole lesson here. But if you don't, you can always catch it for free online, vchour.buzzsprout.com. All my old episodes are there for free. Or if you just Google VC Hour, it's posted everywhere you get podcasts, or you could find it on Sermon Audio. So we're a lot of places, and very thankful for all of our listeners in there. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 10, mostly looking at verses 9 through 12. That's really we're going to zoom in on our reading for today. This is how the passage reads. When Joab saw that the battle was set against him, both in front and in the rear, he chose some of the best men of Israel and arrayed them against the Syrians. The rest of his men he put in charge of Abishai, his brother, and he arrayed them against the Ammonites. And he said, "If the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I will come and help you. Be of good courage, and let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God, and may the Lord do what seems good to him." So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the Ammonites saw the Syrians fled, they likewise fled before Abishai and entered the city. Then Joab returned from fighting against the Ammonites and came to Jerusalem. If you were to ask me about the best day of Joab's life, this is it. If you look at all of the things that are recorded in Scripture, the ones that we have a lens to, of course, we don't see every day of his life, but of all the days we see, I think this is the best one. All right? Now, you may say, like, he's in the middle of a battle, and it doesn't look like it's going to go well. How can that be the best day of his life? Well, follow with me here for just a minute and think about, how did we get here? How did we get in this situation? Basically, there's two guys mentioned here, Joab and Abishai. These two guys are brothers. Joab, the more famous, more influential of the two, but they're both David's nephew. When David was in trouble because of Saul, we've covered him in previous episodes, these guys were with David. They probably, even though they were David's nephews, remember David is the youngest of several brothers. It's likely Joab and Abishai are about the same age as David. When David's an old man, they're also old men. Well, these guys had been with David from the beginning. When David got in trouble, they were in trouble with him, and Saul was a cause of a lot of their trouble, and he actually killed close friends, associates, and people who had helped them, really acted very unjustly in his anger. When David is crowned king of Judah, even though there were some competitors coming from Saul's own family, Joab and Abishai are very instrumental in David being crowned, with Joab taking really a lead role there. Abishai often led parts of David's army, and he's one of that sort of unique group of men called his mighty men. He appears in the list there of his sort of elite fighters. Abishai's name is right there. And Joab is David's general throughout almost all of David's reign. He earned it the hard way. It didn't come to him just because he was a nephew, a relative. It came to him through a grand act of courage where Joab takes Jerusalem from their enemies. And he does it in a very dangerous way, and he does it to earn back the favor of David. He succeeds, and he gets the generalship once again. In this story, if you were to look at 2 Samuel 10, you find that there's a group called the Ammonites, and their king has died. And the king's son gets some really bad advice about what he should do. And David had the intention of keeping good and respectful relationships with the Ammonites, but this son who becomes king, he decides instead to disgrace this envoy that David sends. The way that he does this is by shaving their beards. Hebrew men wore beards, and it was forbidden to shave them. You can find that in Leviticus 19:27. And he tore their clothing so that their bottoms were uncovered, which of course is a great shame. You can see this uncovering of nakedness is something that is forbidden in Numbers 15 and Deuteronomy 22. Man, do I wish that our civilizations knew that it was bad to run around uncovered. That would be wonderful if we only understood what God's told us about uncovering our nakedness. If we had as much shame as David's envoy. These guys are ashamed. They're ashamed. They've been humiliated. Their beards have been shaved. Their clothes have been torn off, and their nakedness has been uncovered. It's really, really embarrassing. For his part, David reacts really well to this situation. He first takes care of these guys. He hides their shame. He lets them stay in a place till they can get into a condition where it's not so immediately embarrassing. But the king of the Ammonites, he does not respond well. That kind of gets us up to today's story. The king of the Ammonites knows it's unlikely that he will beat David himself. And so he hires some mercenaries from Syria. And so it looks like David's not going to be just fighting the Ammonites. He's going to be fighting some Syrian military as well. When he hears this, he sends two of his best fighters, Joab and Abishai, to fight the Ammonites. Now, sometimes in this situation, people want to kind of blow it out of proportion that David doesn't go himself, but at this point, he was more than just a military leader. David is not necessarily expected to be the guy who's at the front of his troops at this point in his life. Previous points, it would have been absolutely necessary. He was supposed to be that type of leader. But at this and in other points, we see that David does have other people leading. And actually, there were times where his own men asked him to stop fighting precisely because he's more valuable to the country than just a military leader. So not necessarily a decision he just made for himself, but he was delegating in what was probably actually a really good way. So Abishai and Joab are set to attack the city, and they discover that the bad guys are already there, and some of them are behind them. You would call that dire circumstances. Things are not going well. All right, so like I've said this before, I'm not a military leader. I certainly was not a soldier or anything like that, but I think it's fairly obvious when it comes to strategy that you don't want to find yourself with your enemy on both sides of you, in front of you and behind you. Generally speaking, that is going to, especially when it's a surprise, that's going to leave you very, very vulnerable to attack. And when we get to today's reading, that's exactly what's happened. Joab, Abishai have gone in to take care of business, only to find out that others are there ahead of them, ready to attack them. So that's where Joab's speech. Joab is the general, he is the leader, and yet he has found a situation which is a very, very bad situation. And I'm happy to say in this circumstance, Joab exercises excellent command, and it's demonstrated really in three ways. First of all, he quickly devises a strategy. How often do we find in life that it's easy to plan things well in advance? We sort of talked about that in a previous episode, how planning in advance is really very important and it's a necessary thing to do. But we also find that just because something is developing in a moment doesn't mean that we should not use strategy in order to affect the outcome. It could be that we, like Joab, found ourselves in a developing situation. Life actually moves pretty fast, as they say. It comes at you fast. And a good leader is able, in the stress of a moment, to assess the situation and to develop a response that is the best response given the situation. How does he handle it? He does it like this. He takes the smaller group of the best troops, and they go fight the mercenaries. They fight the professionals. So this is kind of like, you know, the hard and ready group are going to fight the group that are like professional fighters. So it's like the best against the best, if you want to think of it that way. And he gives his brother the much larger force, but the less skilled force to, again, go fight the Ammonite general army. So just the regular troops that are there, not the mercenaries. The idea being that you are setting yourself up for the best possibility of success. You can see from this that Joab has thought through a situation in which something that seems insurmountable can be addressed in a reasonable way. And in this case, he assesses it as best against best, if you want to think of it that way, best against best. That's his strategy. What's more important for us, and I think in a general principle today, is that we cannot allow our circumstances as leaders to overwhelm us. We cannot allow them to overwhelm us. But instead, what we ought to do is we ought to respond in the command or in the leadership role that God has given us. That means our people are looking to us to be the ones who have an answer or a solution, even to developing problems. It's no good to say, well, this wasn't in the script. I didn't see this written down that we should do something about this. That's not an appropriate and good response for your people. You need to remember that it's not just the outcome or your own reputation that is rested on this, but it's the people who are relying upon you. These are real lives, real humans who are in part going to succeed or fail themselves based on your leadership. That's why you have that role. And so it's no good for you to say, listen, I was as surprised as anyone. But instead, you should say, given what I know now, this is what I think is the best way forward. Not only that, but Joab even has a plan in case his plan doesn't work out. He's got a strategy even for that. Should either of us begin to fail, the other one should come and help. That is, we think we have an adequate force for each of us to win the day, but we have a backup plan. The backup plan is if we start to fail, then we help each other out. You know, your success can help me if I'm failing. So this strategy requires mutual information and reinforcement. That is, you have to be able to assess the people around you and respond accordingly. And so it must have been that he very much trusted his brother, that he very much trusted the troops under his command and his brother's command, and fully expected that they had the discipline to carry the day. That's really the only way this strategy could have worked. So he quickly devises a strategy. Not only that, but we see that he motivates his men. He motivates his men. He gives a short speech here, and I actually love this speech. I do. I'm going to break it down by part because I think actually every part of it is really, really, really helpful. Think of the situation he's in. It's mostly guys, and they're fighting. So you might think the outcome of it is only going to affect them. But in fact, as we'll see, the stakes are much larger than that. And Joab uses that to motivate his men. He begins by saying, "Be of good courage. Be of good courage." I think it's pretty clear in this situation, it would be easy to be overwhelmed by the circumstances. And though Joab has responded correctly, it would be no good for him to put a strategy together and to call his brother to help him out and to arrange things correctly without also providing the correct motivation and attention. And he's telling them that they should be of good courage. Their response to this situation ought not to be one of fear or unpreparedness, but instead that they should take the mental and emotional steps necessary to respond correctly, even in a time of stress. He, in fact, essentially tells them that's what they should be. They should be ready. Be ready with the correct mental and emotional response to your difficult situation. How important it is for leaders to know that they have an impact on the mental and emotional well-being of the people who are under their care, and that they should take special measures to point them in the right direction so they know what the right way to respond is. These days, reactionary emotional leadership is very common, where it's often explained to people, well, they're feeling this way because this is happening, and therefore you should react to that in a certain way, meaning you need to adapt to the emotional response of the people. And certainly there are times where understanding the emotional and mental wherewithal of your people can be very important. But a leader is meant to lead, not to react. That is, Joab's job is not to say, hey guys, let's take a break and kind of think this thing through and let's make sure everybody's in the right headspace for this. That would have been a signal for failure. Joab's job is not just to hold it together for himself, so to speak, but also to motivate his men that there is a direction towards which they should point. That is, they should think about and therefore act in the right way, and that he expects that of them. He's not reacting, he's directing, he's leading. And there's a big, big difference. He also gives them a reason. So he gives them a reason. He starts out saying it's for the people. That is, they need to remember that there are women and children and the elderly that are behind them. And their failure in this moment jeopardizes those people. That's what happens. If this army fails, the prospect of future failure for their people is very high. Without an army in the way, this Ammonite Syrian army could easily become a conquering army. And we all know that that is a bad thing for your people if they get conquered. It's not a good thing. The outcome of that would be terribly, terribly tragic. We do it for the people. So he's reminding them again of the women, the children, the elderly who are relying on them, who are behind them. And he says, for the cities of our God. These are the representations of the places of development and civilization that God has given to them. They're not a people in a barren wasteland, but they're a people that God has given the ability and the opportunity to build cities. And when the invader comes in, one of the things the invader will do, as is demonstrated throughout human history, but especially in this region, is that they will destroy, they will pillage, they will take, they will kill, and what was once a city may not be a city or much of a city afterwards. If you fast forward a bit in history, a much larger and certainly more successful army ultimately does take the city of Jerusalem, and when they do, they wage such extensive warfare that there was little to no evidence of continuing culture after they came until the restoration post-exile. in their minds, they would have known that that has happened to other places, that to lose means not just the destruction of people, but the destruction of a civilization that God himself had given them. Destruction of a civilization that God himself had given them. Then he says, may the Lord do what seems good to him. That is, he motivates his men by pointing them back to the Lord. What an amazing and right thing for a leader to do. Understanding, it seems very clearly in this moment, that reliance upon God for the outcome, as we've discussed in previous episodes, is a key component in good leadership. It's not just that you have the best plan or the best strategy or the best alliances or you're incredibly gifted. All of those things may be true, but if the Lord is not in it, you will fail. But instead, Joab points correctly towards God as being the center point of the plan, which is if the Lord gives us victory, we will win. And honestly, if you examine the things that Joab ever says in his life, all the recorded things he ever says, this is maybe the best thing we ever hear him say. In that moment, he doesn't sound like Joab the tough guy, the man of violence that we often see in the story, who's a bit too eager to kill people, a bit too eager to use violence as a tool. Instead, he sounds like Joshua. Dare I say he sounds like David when he talks like this. May the Lord do what seems good to him. I rely on the Lord. He has the outcomes in his hand. What a beautiful thing. And I pray that every single one of us will think of our plans the same way. We may be doing something that's good in our own minds, that we think the outcome of it going our way is the only good thing that can happen. But it's actually the Lord who has to be in the plans. Man can make plans however he wants, but the Lord has to be in it. And boy, does Joab really get that in this moment. If he had lived consistently his whole life with that idea, what a difference it really would have made. It really would have been a big difference. Now, the third piece to this is it's fine to have a strategy, it's fine to have motivations, but you have to actually execute the strategy. And in fact, Joab and Abishai demonstrate their great leadership and their ability to exercise command by not just having a strategy and motivating men, but by ultimately carrying out that strategy consistently. The Syrians are crushed. That is, the guys that are up as a mercenary force against Joab and his guys, they're absolutely crushed. The Ammonites on the other side, that sort of general army there that was fighting Abishai, they see how badly the hired help is beaten, and they flee to their cities. That means they run away. So when we think about that, what should we think? Well, we should think that a leader, he's going to have to devise a strategy. You got to have a way that you think things could move forward. It's no good to throw your hands in the air. In your absence of leadership, someone else is going to step up, and they may not be the right person for the moment. Secondly, a good leader is going to motivate the men, motivate your people. Joab had men under his command, but maybe you have men, maybe you have women. Whoever it may be, they ought to be motivated. You have to point them in the right direction. Don't simply react to whatever they are or adjust to what they are, but direct them to what they also ought to be. Point them towards a better destination, a better location than you find them in. This includes reliance upon God for the outcomes. And finally, execution of the strategy. It's no good to have a way forward, no good to motivate people about the way forward. Now you have to actually do it. In conclusion, let me just leave you the words of Joab for them to ring in your ears as they're ringing in mine. Be of good courage. Let us be courageous for God's people and for God's kingdom, and may the Lord do what seems good to him. Thanks be to God. Appreciate you listening. Hope to catch you again on the next episode. We'll hear about the leadership of Pontius Pilate.
You're listening to the Vice Chancellor's Hour, a ministry of Radio ABC 993 FM on the campus of African Bible University. I'm Jeremiah Pitts, a professor and administrator here at the African Bible University in Uganda. The purpose of Vice Chancellor's Hour is to provide biblical and theological teachings that are an extension of the ministry of the university.